Okay, hi everyone, thank you for attending this session. I'm going to introduce now the Arnon Yorgev. So I will all give him a great warm and thanks for the presentation and let him do.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Arnon. I work for IBM Research in a team called Social Analytics and Technologies. And this lecture is about fast and scalable email systems with Apache Solr. Is there an echo? All right. Okay, so I'm going to share the story of a specific email system in IBM that started out somewhat fast and somewhat scalable. And after several cycles of improvement, gradually became much, much faster and much more scalable. So the focus of my talk will be on how we optimized our Solr infrastructure and the way we use Solr to our specific use case and made it perform much better and be more cost effective. So I'll start with some background. The email system I mentioned is called IBM Verse. It's a cloud-based business email system, so it's B2B, the clients are businesses. And it's relatively new in the market, about 2 years old, has everything you expect from an email system, your emails, your calendar and your meetings, the important to me people bar at the top, and some other cool features like filtering emails with attachments, with links, and so on. Okay. What's important to know about this system in the context of this talk is that the backend is heavily based on Apache Solr. That means that every interaction we, the users, do with the system is translated into one or more queries to the Solr backend. And it's not just search, it's everything that we do. So it can be when we refresh our inbox, when we search for a keyword or a person, when we filter emails with attachments, compose new emails, reply to emails, delete emails, change folders. Everything means that one or more Solr query is sent to the backend. And when we started implementing the system, we had an initial design which supported a certain number of users, but we had to improve it before we could release the system. We released it to IBM employees at first, and later on to external customers. So our mission was to support IBM Verse's future growth in terms of stability, scalability, and cost effectiveness by optimizing its Solr infrastructure and usage. So in other words, we optimized the way we use Solr to achieve several goals. First, we wanted to improve performance. And improved performance means better user experience. But on top of that, it also means that you increase your server capacity, so you can fit more and more users into a single server. And this means that you need less servers and you reduce the costs. So these were the two main objectives, better user experience and reduced costs. So this was the mission. How did we achieve it? Well, we used the main premise that we used is the understanding that email search is not the same as web search. So email search has its set of unique characteristics. And once you learn these characteristics, you understand them, then you gain insights, which you can take advantage of to optimize your system specifically for email search. So a few examples for these characteristics. We know that mailboxes are private. That's one unique thing. We also know that the main interactions are performed on the latest emails and not just on random emails. And also we know that results are typically sorted by date. So these are a few examples. And in the next few slides, I'll elaborate on how we use these characteristics to improve our system. So before we get to the actual improvements, I want to say a few words about the setup that we used and the environment, specifically the benchmarking framework. And when I prepared this section of the presentation, it reminded me of a short anecdote. When I was a child, I used to ride around the bus, and we would pass next to construction sites where they build new buildings. And you know that they use, I think it's called scaffolding, like these temporary wooden platforms and ladders that they first build, and then they stand on it and build a wall or paint the wall or whatever. And after the building is done, then they take it apart. And as a child, it used to drive me crazy because they spent probably a week or 2 weeks building something that is not part of the end result. And then they just take it apart. And of course, I thought that why don't they just, you know, stand on ladders or hang from ropes or something like that. And as I grew up, I understood that, yes, it's quite necessary to build a building using this way. And the reason it reminded me of this is because in the first few weeks or even months of our work, we didn't make any improvements at all. All we did was we implemented a benchmarking framework, that enables us to test every change or every improvement that we will make in the future. So we spent quite a lot of effort implementing this flexible and reliable system, and in retrospect, it was definitely worth this effort. So I'll say a few words about this framework. It consisted of three main models, starting with the email data generator, which we use to generate synthetic email data. So we received statistics and distributions from our real email system. For example, what's the average length of an email? How many emails are in an email thread on average? What's the percentage of emails that have attachments? And using this, we were able to generate synthetic email data that really looked very similar to the real email data. So this was done by the first model. Then we needed to index all this data into Solr, and for that we had an indexer model, which took this generated data and indexed it. Now, this might sound a bit straightforward or even simple, but it wasn't the case for us, because one of the main things that we tested was comparing different indexing strategies, and I'll elaborate on this soon. So we needed this model to support indexing the same data into different instances of Solr using very different indexing strategies. So this is the indexer model. And finally, we used the Apache JMeter to simulate the user workload. So we had a list of user scenarios. For example, the user logs in, the user does a keyword search, the user replies to an email, composes a new email, and so on. And for each such scenario, we also knew the frequency. So how often does it happen? Does a user perform this scenario? And using this information, we knew the throughput of each query, and we could simulate a real workload of many users. So this was done by the third model. And the architecture looked something like this. We had our Solr cloud cluster with two servers with a replication factor of two. It used a Zookeeper ensemble of three nodes. And then there was the driver machine with Apache JMeter installed on it. And it sent queries to the backend, received responses, and did some measuring. It measured the average response time and many other parameters. Also important to mention that we did measure the server side, like the response times, but we also wanted to know what's going on. I'm sorry, we did measure the client side, but we also wanted to know what happens on the server side. So we had a bunch of scripts monitoring the server in terms of CPU, memory consumption, garbage collection, and so on. So this was the architecture. And the approach that we used was quite simple. We had short and self-contained improvement cycles, and we started from the low-hanging fruits, from the simplest improvements, and then went more advanced. So we would look at the system, analyze it in terms of bottlenecks, pain points, etc. Then we would come up with solutions and assess them. What's the implementation time? What's the expected gain? We implemented these solutions, and we tested them using the benchmarking framework. So this was our cycle. As I mentioned, we had several improvement cycles, starting from the simplest ones to the more advanced ones. And for the next few slides, I'll go over the main improvement cycles that we had. So like I said, we're starting simple with schema optimizations. In the first few optimizations that I'll show, you'll see that it's very relevant to many use cases and not just email search. And as we go more advanced, we'll see the use of the different observations regarding email search. So we're starting simple with schema optimizations. One of the first things that we do when we build a new system that is based on Solr is to model our data. And for that, we design a schema. And the schema design has crucial effect on usability and performance and so on. So what we did was to look at the schema and find ways to optimize our system using the schema. So I'll show a few examples. The first optimization that we suggested was to replace wildcard queries with Boolean fields. And I'll use a specific example, which is from our real use case. So we had a query that filtered emails that have attachments. And it had a clause that looked something like this. It said attachment name, wildcard. So in other words, return all the documents that have some attachment name. So what does that mean? What does Solr do on the back end? What it means is that Solr must iterate over millions of posting lists, over many, many posting lists, one for each unique value of an attachment name, and then collect all the documents from these lists. And this is quite inefficient. So the improvement that we suggested was a simple one. Add a new field to the schema, Boolean field, called hasAttachment, and then the query looked something like hasAttachment true. And what happens now is that Solr iterates over a single posting list only. So we did make this change. We tested it. And we found that the results show that some queries have improved significantly, sometimes by 20 times faster, whereas others were not that affected. For example, we had the status field, to which we added has status. And we saw that there was no significant improvement there. The reason was that the status field had only three unique values. So the difference between before and after was iterating over three posting lists versus one. But in other cases, like has URL, you know that each URL is unique, and the difference there was much more significant. Okay, this is an example for one schema optimization. I'll show one more. And this is the use of doc values. So I'll explain shortly about doc values. The way data is stored by default in Solr looks something like this. It's row-oriented. So we have each row is a document, and then for each document we have the field values of this document. This is very useful for some types of functionalities. For example, when we return a result set, a set of documents, we also want to return all of their stored fields, so we just grab specific rows. But for other types of functionalities, like faceting and sorting, we're actually interested in looking at an entire column. So if we're sorting by field 2, we need to look at field 2, all of the values in field 2. And the way this is done in this structure is using the field cache. So the various fields are inserted to the field cache, and this consumes a lot of memory and might cause out-of-memory issues, errors, and this is exactly what we witnessed. We started getting out-of-memory. We investigated it and found that the memory is consumed by the field cache. So the solution was to use doc values. Doc values are column-oriented fields, so you can see the different structure. Each field is a row, and each document is a column. And now it's much easier and more efficient for Solr to do operations like sorting and faceting. So this simple change already solved the out-of-memory problems. It doesn't come for free because you must maintain another data structure so your index size increases, but it's completely worth it. Okay, so these were a couple of schema optimizations. We'll go to the next cycle, still at the low-hanging fruits of the tree, still with the simple changes. We'll look at query optimizations.
Another question, which Solr version did you use?
So we used several. We started, the initial versions was Solr 4.7, then 5.3, and now even 6.6. Mm-hmm. Okay. So query optimizations, I'll show a few examples on that. The first optimization or recommendation that we had was to use filter queries or FQ parameter. Let's again look at an example. We had a query that looked something like this. It said, I'll say it in English, please return all the email documents that have the word Apache and were sent by Bob and were not deleted. So this was before. We recommended using the FQ parameter, filter query. So now it looked like return email documents that have the word Apache and filter by sender Bob and filter by non-deleted. So what's the difference? It's about the same. The results are quite the same. The difference in one word is caching. Because when you use filter queries, you start using the filter cache. And if we look at this example, let's take the last clause, for example, filter emails that are not deleted. This specific filtering can be relevant to many other queries as well. So caching it is probably something you would want to do. Whereas here, the caching is done on the query entirely. So it might not be that useful to do. So this was one optimization that we had. One more thing to mention involves scoring. The scoring here is determined only by the Q parameter, so only by the number of times Apache appears in the text, which is what we want to happen. Okay, this was a filter query. Another recommendation was the use of the FL or field list parameter. I'm sure most of you know it, but the default behavior of Solr when returning a document is returning all of its stored fields. This is not always optimal. Sometimes you have, you know, 40 or 50 fields in a document, sometimes much more, but you're only interested in two or three of them. So using this parameter, it allows you to define explicitly the fields you want to return. And that means that you reduce your response size, and you save bandwidth and simplify parsing. So these are a couple of query optimizations. I'll show one more. And this had to do with the grouping or avoiding them. So the grouping functionality in Solr, I think it's pretty great. It's very simple, very useful. Like in our use case, for example, we group emails by threads. But you do need to know that it's time consuming. And indeed, when we looked at the queries that we have in our system and the response times, we found that the ones with the grouping are the heavier ones, the ones that take the most to finish. So we looked at them one by one, examined them, and tried to think if there's anything we can do about it. And sometimes you can't. You just need this grouping functionality, and you can't avoid it. But in other cases, you can do something. Here's an example. We had a query that said, please return email documents with the word Apache and divide them into two groups. One are emails from my inbox, and the other is emails in general. So this was the before, and what we tried was to split this query into two completely separate queries. One says, return email documents with the word Apache from my inbox. The other says, return email documents with the word Apache. And you can see that the results are the same, but in terms of performance, we did see that the time it takes for these two separate queries to finish going sequentially, one after another, is still shorter than one it took for this single query that had grouping in it. So this was the case for our specific use case, and we did make this change. And overall, looking at all the query optimizations, we were able to improve our runtime by up to 33%, depending on the query, which is not bad considering the fact that, you know, query optimizations are the easiest thing to do. They don't require reindexing or any changes in the architecture. Okay, so these were the query optimizations. Now we're no longer at the low-hanging fruits. We're climbing higher up the tree. And we'll talk about indexing strategies. So once you have your data, there are many ways you can index it into Solr. You can play with the number of collections, with the number of shards, the number of Solr cloud instances. And selecting the right indexing strategy has crucial effect on performance and usability of the system. So the relevant observation that we had here was this. We knew that indexing emails is unique in the sense that mailboxes are private. So this is one of the key points here. Mailboxes are private. They're completely separated. So what it means is that we're not dealing with one giant data set containing all the emails in the organization, but with a collection of much smaller data sets, which are the user mailboxes. And these are completely private and separated from one another. So given this, we tried, we indexed our data using various indexing strategies, and we compared the results. We looked at some parameters. For example, the running time of indexing scenarios, for example, composing a new email, replying to an email, deleting an email. We also looked at the running time of the search scenarios, like inbox refresh and the getting the favorite people bar at the top. And we also examined the server-side behavior, CPU, memory, garbage collection. So we compared all of these with the different indexing strategies. Okay, so one of the first things we did had to do with user mailboxes and shards. First, our data was divided into 5-node clusters. So again, there's no point in doing one giant solar cloud instance because you have separated data. So we used 5-node clusters, each with its own solar cloud instance. User emails or mailboxes are assigned into a single cluster, including the replicas. But the initial designs indexed a user across all shards within the cluster, which is not an optimal thing to do since a single mailbox can definitely fit into a single shard. So if you're just using all the shards, you're adding additional complexity of distributed search, which you don't really need. So our solution was to make sure that each mailbox is assigned into a single shard. And this already reduced the load on each solar node because there was no distributed search involved and gave us some improvement in query time. But this was just the first step. Because given now that we had our solar clusters, we still had several alternatives to index our data. So let's look at a few of them. We could have a single collection and a single shard per solar cloud. This was one option, and that means, let's say, for example, we have 10,000 users on a single cluster, okay? So we could fit all of them into a single collection and a single shard. This is one option. Another option, which is on the other extreme, is to have a collection per mailbox. So each mailbox will have its own collection. This definitely has its advantages in terms of privacy and also performance in some cases. But it does mean that if you have 10,000 mailboxes, then you will need 10,000 collections, and you will need solar to support 10,000 collections, which is far from its typical use case. But we didn't want to examine this strategy. We also looked at charge per mailbox, which is quite similar, but we still wanted to test both of them. So these are the two extreme indexing strategies, and we also looked at some in the middle. Specifically, we looked at a single collection with n shards. N can be, you know, 50, 100, 20, 200, depending on your use case. And of course, each shard contains several mailboxes, 10,000 over n in our example. And a similar strategy was, instead of having a single collection, multiple shards, to have multiple collections, each with a single shard. Now, each collection will have several mailboxes in it. So we tested all of these strategies. We also tested others, but these were the main ones. And let's look at the results. So first, we found that the single collection, single shard option, the first one, it performed very poorly. And this was no surprise because the data set is not small. We're talking for each cluster probably hundreds of gigabytes or even 1 or 2 terabytes. And to fit all of them into a single Lucene index is challenging. So this was the first result. On the other extreme, we had the collection and shard per mailbox strategies. And here we found that they had the best performance when we were up to 1,000 users, meaning 1,000 collections. But as we started to scale up, it was just too much. I mean, when we reached to around 2,000 mailboxes, collections or shards, then it was no longer usable. We started getting constant error messages from Solar, from Zookeeper, leader election, and 10 other types of errors. And it was just a sort of a limitation that we've hit there. So we're left with the indexing strategies in the middle. And out of them, we found that the multi-collection strategies perform better than the multi-shard strategies. And they also utilize the resources, CPU and memory, better. So given this, we updated our indexing strategy in the actual system. And by doing that, we gained running time improvement of 8 to 32%, depending on the query. OK, so this was the indexing strategy work. Now we're taking it up a notch, going even more advanced, or more interesting, in my opinion. Let's talk about sorted index. And we'll start with the key observation that in email systems, most queries require sorting by date. So when we refresh our inbox, we see our emails sorted by date descendingly, starting from the most recent ones. And we also know that the default sorting in Lucene and Solar is by doc IDs, or order of indexing. So the idea was, why not keep the index already sorted by email dates? Let's think about it for a second. If we have a query that says, please return the 20 most recent emails, then what Solar has to do with the default sorting is iterate over all of my emails, sort them by date, and then return the top 20 emails. Whereas if the index is already sorted by date, then it can just iterate over the first 20 results, 20 documents, and then return them, and that's it, which is much simpler. This is called early termination. When you reach the requested number of results, you can terminate your query. And of course, we're not getting it for free, because now we need to make sure that the index is sorted by date. So this is additional work at indexing time. Okay. You could define different sorting for your results. So you could sort it by date. For example, we had queries that said return the documents of a specific users and sort them by date. Like we have for, you know, when we see our inbox, then
so
it's not.
So you don't enter a search query. When
yes.
You say I want the most recent emails.
Yes.
So it's not a, technically speaking, it's not really a search. Well.
Okay. So I'll stress this point. Many of the queries we had in this system are not search queries, because every interaction that is done on the email is translated into Solar queries. So yeah, most of it is not search. Okay. All right, so how did we approach this? We implemented two modules. We actually extended Solar with two modules. The first one was the sorting merge policy, which made sure that the index is sorted by date. I'll say a few words about merge policy. When new data is written or indexed into Lucene, then it is first written into segments, which are small at first, and then later on, small segments are merged into larger segments, which are later on merged into even larger segments. So questions like when a merge happens or how it happens are determined by the merge policy. So what we did is we made sure that during a merge, our documents will be sorted according to date. So this is basically what we did. This type of functionality, the sorting merge policy, already existed in Lucene, but was not part of Solar. So we introduced it to Solar. And then the second model was, now that we have a sorted index, we need to use it correctly and do early termination. So we implemented two versions. We had the basic version supporting early termination for standard queries. And we had the advanced one that also supported it for grouping queries, which is a bit more complicated to do. So we also worked with the community, so it will be part of Solr, and it is starting Solr 6. Now you can use it out of the box. And let's look at the results. So the runtime of queries that perform sorting by date has improved by 6 to 23%, depending on the query. We also found that early termination in grouping queries, the advanced version, did not show any significant improvement, which makes sense in our use case because the group sizes we have are quite small, so sorting within a group is not that big of a deal. So this was another conclusion. And also there was no observable indexing time slowdown, which was pretty good because there was no user experience damage to user experience or to the system load in general. Okay, so this was our work on sorted index. The next improvement that we've made, also my personal favorite, is a multi-tiered index. And we'll start with the key observation. So users are often interested in their recent emails. This makes sense. I don't know about you, but when I read or write an email or reply to an email, it's usually an email from today, maybe yesterday, sometimes last week, rarely last month or even before that. So the idea is let's have several tiers to our index, several layers. So we'll have the archive tier containing all of our emails. But on top of that, we'll add a recent tier containing just emails that are recent. So it can be emails from last month, last week, last quarter, depending on your use case. In our case, it was last month. And now what you gain is that some of the queries are interested only in recent emails, and they can use this recent tier, which is much smaller and more efficient to query. Also, different tiers can be placed on different hardware. So you can have your archive tier on plain spinning disks and your recent tier on SSDs. So this was the idea. Let's see how we implemented it. We started with the non-tiered strategy. Like I mentioned, it was multi-collection, so we had N collections, let's say 50 collections, single shard, and each collection contained multiple mailboxes. And what we did was simply adding an additional N collections. So now we had two N collections. We had the archive tier and the recent tier. So what happens now? Now, indexing is performed on both tiers because when you have a new email, you must place it in the archive tier, in a collection in the archive tier, and a collection in the recent tier. So you're doing an extra work there. But searching depends on the query because some queries are interested in recent emails only and they can target the recent tier, whereas others are interested in all of the emails and they'll target the archive tier. So this was the strategy that we chose. We did consider others, so I'll show a few of them, two of them, and alternative strategies for tiering. One thought that we had was, well, since the recent tier is quite small, maybe we don't need N collections to host it. Maybe one collection is enough for the entire recent tier because it's just emails from last month, and that's it. So we implemented it, and we did test this option and compared it to the ones we ended up choosing, and we saw that the performance here was not as good. So we didn't choose this. Another alternative was to do the following. In the archive tier, instead of having all the emails, we could have just the emails that are not recent. So we'll have the emails from last month in the recent tier and the rest of them in the archive tier. So what does that give us? First, it saves disk space because now emails from last month are not duplicated into two tiers. And also it saves some work during indexing because now you're only indexing to the recent tier and not to two tiers. But in this case, the weight of the cons was much higher because the level of complexity you're adding is just too much. Now, when you have a query that is interested in all of your emails, you need to actually query two different tiers or two collections, then somehow merge the results into a single result set, which is complicated to do. And also, you'll need a mechanism to move emails from the recent tier to the archive tier after they are no longer recent. So these are a couple of alternatives. Okay, so the results that we saw with the multi-tiered work is that queries that target the recent tier ran 2 to 15 times faster than when they used to target the archive tier, which is great news. We did see that the indexing scenarios had a 2x slowdown, so they take twice as much to finish, which makes sense because now we're indexing into two collections instead of one. But since indexing time is already very efficient, less than 25 milliseconds, doubling it did not have significant effect on our system, on user experience or the load workload in general. And another important thing here is that client-side changes are required. And let me explain. What we're doing here is an architectural change in the system. We're introducing multi-tiering. This is done in the backend. But it will be very useful if the client is aware of that, that there are two tiers. So, you know, sometimes people want to avoid it, the client side knowing how the backend looks like. But in this case, I personally believe it's the way to go. Let's look at an example. Let's look at keyword search. What we want to happen is that more and more queries will be sent to the recent tier because that's the efficient one. So an example could be that when the user performs a search, first he will get the emails from the last month only, and then he'll have a show more button. If he clicks on that, there's an additional query going to the archive tier. Okay, and that is a client-side change, but it is a better utilization of the backend. Okay. So this was the multi-tiered work. I'll briefly go over a couple of more recommendations that we had, starting with the hardware configuration, specifically SSDs. We know that SSD infrastructure leads to better performance on one hand, but it means that the servers cost more on the other hand. So we wanted to know whether it's worth it to use SSDs or not. And to make a long story short, we found that storing the solar instances on SSDs resulted in a significantly better runtime, which means that we could fit many more users into a single server, so we saved costs. So each server costs more because it has SSDs, but the number of servers you need is much lower, so you're saving on costs. So using SSDs was another recommendation. And the final recommendation was about Solar version. Specifically, upgrade your Solar version, at least with every major release. Like I said, when we started it, we worked with the Solar 4.7, which was at the time a year and a half old. And this is not optimal to work with an older version of Solar for some reasons. For example, the support from the community. When you ask, let's say you have a problem and you ask the community, naturally the first response will be, well, try it on a new version of Solar. Why are you trying it on Solar 4? That's one reason to switch to an updated version. There are others like bug fixes, improved stability, new features, and also if you want to extend Solar to contribute to the code, like we did with the sorted index, then you can do it only on a new version. You cannot extend Solar 4 at this point. So we did upgrade, and we found that there's an improved stability and performance. Okay, so I want to summarize. We've seen several cycles of improvement, and we saw that each one contributed or improved our performance. Like I mentioned, this was the first part of it, improving performance. We also wanted to see it translated into lower costs because of the increased server capacity. And so we were happy to see that the picture looked something like this. We started with a monthly cost per user of, let's say, X cents per month. And after several improvements, we were down to 50% X, 3/8 X, and now we're somewhere here at 25% X. And we have some ideas for the future, which we believe will bring us somewhere here to around 10 or 15% X. So these are good news for our managers, mostly. And finally, the lessons that we've learned. So Solar, when used out of the box, it's already amazing. I mean, you just, you know, untar it, you build your schema, and you can already use it. It's very powerful, but it's still not perfect for every use case. And you need to make it perfect for your use case. So to do that, you need to know your data, how it looks like, what does it contain, what's the structure of it. You also need to know your users. Who are they? How do they use the system? What kind of queries do they do? What's the frequency of each query? And then once you have this knowledge and you gain observations and insights, then you can optimize your system accordingly. We recommend starting simple and then going advanced. And last but not least, you must benchmark every change that you make. And to do that, do the extra effort to implement a good way to benchmark it. We implemented the benchmarking framework to make it as flexible and reliable as possible. So these are the lessons. I think they're relevant. This methodology is relevant for many use cases, not just email search. That's it. So thank you.
So we have like 10 minutes to ask anything. Anyone has any question?
How many Solar queries do you typically fire to so-called serve a request from your client side?
A single request?
A single request. Like, let's say when you enter the mailbox, then you need to load out the different components. How many queries do you fire typically?
Right. So it really depends on the scenario. For example, there's the login scenario, which, you know, the page just refreshes. And then you need to refresh all the components, like you said. So there's the important to me bar, and there's the facets at the side, and the email, your inbox. So this came up to around 7 queries.
Around 7.
Yes, but this was the highest number, and for other scenarios, we had sometimes 2, 3 queries.
Okay, that one is for how many concurrent users?
I don't know the exact number, but it depends on the Solar Cloud.
Okay.
And each Solar Cloud has, I think, tens of thousands of users. So okay. I don't know.
So for a few hundred users, it should be very healthy.
Sorry, for a few hundred users?
Yeah, if I have, like for example, 250 to 350 users concurrently firing, causing 7 queries to be fired.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you should be okay.
Should be okay.
We had tens of thousands of users per cluster. It doesn't mean all of them are running queries at the same time.
Yeah,
but yeah, a few hundred users should support it.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
So when doing performance testing, it's always an issue that you get a lot of noise from the underlying operating system that's hard to control. Was that an issue for you?
That's always an issue, so we try to make it as sterile as possible. Like, we restarted the system before each benchmark run. We also looked at we didn't run just a single run per configuration. We tested several of them. That's also always something to worry about.
Any more? Okay, restarting system makes sense. Any more good hints on how to control this better?
It's just making sure it's as sterile as possible. Nothing else is running on the system except for your tests on the servers, and running them several times, looking at the average, and so on. Okay.
And you mentioned JMeter for doing the performance testing. Did you just fire Solar queries, or did you do any special JMeter plugins?
So JMeter, we did use it to fire Solar queries, mostly. For the indexing scenarios, we did use its bin shell options, where you can write actual code. So, for example, when we index a random email, then you need to generate random emails. So we did have a jar which we added to JMeter, and it would call this function that generates an email. But basically, JMeter out of the box, it already did the tree because it really allows you to send HTTP queries and get all the results you need.
And a final question, in the end you mentioned SSDs for performance.
Yes.
This is ideally you have the entire index in memory, so then it shouldn't make much of a difference. Is this, or how does it make a difference?
So I'm not sure you actually have your entire index in memory most of the time. And I mean, there's a lot of I/O going on almost always. So SSDs really improve it. Mm-hmm. This work.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Did you try field collapsing instead of grouping?
This is something that we considered, but we haven't tried it. But we have a few milestones ahead, so it's a good
okay.
point.
In our application, it was incredibly faster.
Really?
And we do not use grouping anymore. It's really, really too slow. And
okay.
So I think field collapsing could be really great for you.
Right. We will try. Thank you.
Hello. I'm just interested in benchmarking. So you said you need to benchmark it. You wrote your own framework. What do you use? Are there tools out there? What sort of things were you recording? Can you talk a bit more about benchmarking, how you did it?
Well, yes. Well, I can look at the specific slide again. Yes, so I mean, we had our Solar Cloud cluster. We had the Zookeeper ensemble and the driver machine. It sent queries using JMeter and received them. And like I said, we also monitored the server side, looking at CPU, memory, and garbage collection. So I mean, the first, let's say the main work on the framework was done implementing this. The data generator that generated the emails and the indexer model that, you know, we've seen different ways to index, different indexing strategies. So
how do you collect all that data together? So you do all that, but then how do you put it all together to sort of compare? You were saying you run it every run, so it must be automated somehow. And how are you putting it all back together to compare different queries?
We just had different Solar instances. We used a small set of servers, so we'll use the same server for the benchmarks. And every time we would start a single instance, and then benchmark it once or several times, look at the results, and then starting the same with another instance. Okay.
Hi. When you talked about sorted indexes,
yes,
you said that it was not sorted at query time, but the sorting made when you update the collection or
when you the sorting itself is done
before you update the collection. I mean, on the application side or.
Okay, so the sorting itself is done when segments are merged, and this is a Lucene part. So it depends. Sometimes you do a lot of commits, and each commit is a new segment, and then you get many merges. Other times your merges are not that often. So yeah, but it's done during indexing time, generally.
Okay. And did you reload the collection in order to force the indexation or not?
We did not. We didn't do any optimize or reload.
No. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Did you also take a look at the code? That means, Solar has quite sophisticated JMX facilities. That's why I don't completely understand why you implemented your own benchmarking framework, because you could just take a look at JMX. And as soon as you take a look at JMX, you see also breakdowns, which functions need how much time. And this should give you a good idea of where the time is really wasted.
Okay. So generally, yes, we did look much at the Solar code, and we didn't just choose JMeter out of the blue. We did examine other frameworks. There's a benchmarking framework for Lucene, which we didn't use because it's not the same as Solar. So yeah, generally we did examine several options and chose to implement our own.
Do you also have this scenario of shared mailboxes so that multiple different users can access a shared mailbox? So how to manage permission? And so do you only search other users' mailbox, for example?
Okay, so our specific use case was that mailboxes are completely separated. There's no shared information. If there's an email sent from person A to person B, it will be duplicated. This was our specific use case. I think if you're dealing with shared mailboxes, then it's a whole different story. I mean, starting from the architecture to the queries. So, yeah. Okay. Are there any other questions? All right. Thank you.
So I think we are set. Let's thank again to Arno.
Thank you.
Thank you all for attending, sir.